Well, we won't be dismissing the kids today because there's no children church. So if there is, it's going to be something that you create yourself. So unfortunately, the youth are away, so not today. Just a story. I think I said this before once here. I think who was here? One of your former pastors, anyway, was here. And I was telling this little bit of a story. It's a chain letter that this church received. They were looking for a pastor. And so they receive this chain letter, and it goes on to tell them that they need to put their name of their church at the bottom of the list and send it to 10 different churches that they knew. And then within 3 weeks, they would receive the names of 25 different pastors that they could call. And then it has this caution at the bottom of the letter. It says, warning, one church broke the chain and got their old pastor back again. So I don't know if you got a chain letter, but anyway. And I just want to also thank you last week for all the kind words. Gracious, kind words that you shared last Sunday. I was surprised. I had no idea that Darren was going to do that, and I was just really blessed by your words of encouragement. You know, this Sunday I just struggled what am I going to share this Sunday? Because as I started to think about it, there was a whole bunch of things went through my head. It's like, how about this and this and that? And it was just like kind of a little bit overwhelming. To decide just where to go, what to share this Sunday. But I also knew that I couldn't share everything that was on my mind and heart to share. I just couldn't cover all of that. So it's kind of like the farmer's story, you know, the one guy shows up at church one Sunday and the pastor says, what am I supposed to do? And there's only one person in church. And the old farmer says, well, when I go to feed the cattle, if only one cow shows up, I feed it. And so he unleashed his sermon. It was very, very long, you know, about an hour long. And afterwards, the old farmer came to him and said, yeah, he said, but when I feed, when only one cow comes to be fed, I don't give it the whole truckload. So I realized I can't give you the whole truckload today. I don't want to do that either. And so I thought, you know, what could I do? I could dress up as Moses, and I could tell the story of Moses, what it was like when he said goodbye to the people of Israel before they went to the promised land. And I thought, oh, I'm so unlike Moses. Oh, that wouldn't look good. So I couldn't do that. And, you know, just all these different thoughts. So Darren said, drop a bomb. He said, we'll just clean up the mess next week. So, no, I don't want to do that either. So that's not me. So anyway, I also realized that I'll probably have other opportunities, Lord willing, to share, to talk to you, speak to you. Maybe in the future there'll be some opportunities for that. So it's not like I'm totally gone. Or not like Moses, I'm not dying at the end of my ministry, I don't think. But two themes played in my heart and mind quite a bit this week, but also probably through my time as a pastor. And maybe they're a bit of a, in some ways look at it, maybe the core of my time as a pastor. And so I'm going to share a little bit about that. It's share some scripture, but also share a little bit of some of the experiences of that I've had as a pastor. Actually, a while back, I shared that with some of our leadership teams, and they said, you need to share that some Sunday, and I never did get around to it, so maybe I can weave some of that into this morning as well. Two things is the call to serve, and the second one is the faithfulness of our God. So that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. We all have a call to serve, all of us. And when you think of serving, we generally think of pastor clicking the... Oh, there it is. Oops, back up. Sorry, guys. I didn't see down here, so. There. Oh, there we go. That's not showing up down here, so I don't know what's behind me. I need my rear view mirror here. But anyway, when you think of serving, we generally think of in terms of New Testament and Jesus teaching about serving. But serving actually was part of the Old Testament as well. Again and again in the Old Testament, God spoke to his people and called them my servant. And even there's some enemy nations that he raised up to come and deal with his people, to discipline them, that he called his servant. And so this theme is Old Testament and New Testament, this theme that God's people are his servants, that he calls us and names us and trusts us as his servants. We have the story of Jesus, of course, New Testament is so clear. And I want to just take you to Philippians chapter 2 for a moment here. I would say Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 to 11, is a powerful description or explanation of the heart and attitude of Jesus who came to serve. It's a great theological passage, but it's also a very practical passage. So let me read, and I just want to start at, maybe I'll start at verse 1 to give a little bit of context there. If you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. And then this, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should not look only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. And then he paints this attitude, this picture of Jesus. Your attitude should be the same as that of Jesus Christ, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore God highly exalted him to the highest place and gave him a name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. And when we read those words there, especially verses 6 to 11, we have the whole story of Jesus, who was in very nature God in heaven. And he laid everything aside. He laid aside his privilege, his rights, his glory, his power. Everything that had to do with his time in heaven, he set that all aside. And he appeared on earth as a baby, as a man. He took on human form with all its limitations. It may be hard for us to even wrap our head around that, what that would be like to be God, the Son, Creator, with all the rights and privileges and power that were at his disposal, to set that all aside and limit himself to a human body. And it goes on to say that he humbled himself. That's really what it is. Jesus humbled himself, stepped out of his world and into ours, and he served us. His service took him to the cross, where he suffered and died a humiliating death. But on top of that, what we need to remember is that also on the cross, he took on the sin of the world. And so he actually became sin for us. All the sin that any person in this world has ever committed was all in that moment on the cross laid on him. And that must have been a great humiliation to him. Holy God, bearing the sin of the world, scarred and painted black with our sin. And that was his act of service. Maybe another practical example of the service of Jesus would be found in John 13. And John 13 is the account of Jesus washing disciples' feet. It was just before the Passover. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave the world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. And these words, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So, knowing all that, he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus said, You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, Peter said, you'll never wash my feet. And Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Down to verse 13. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. And if you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. In that encounter, we have Jesus, who is sitting at the head of the table. He was their leader and their master. Leaving the table, coming back, wrapped as a servant, with a towel, not much, just a towel and a basin of water. And he knelt and washed their feet, very, very simple act, but it was an act of service to the disciples. That act, that service was limited to usually the lowest ranking servant in the house. So Jesus, being their Lord and leader, master, God in the flesh, dressed himself as a servant, humbled himself, and he knelt down and washed their feet. Just another example of some of the ways that Jesus modeled servanthood for us. And the next truth to come out of that is that every Christian then is called to a life of service. And he challenged his disciples here. Now, I don't know if he really meant for all of us to always be washing each other's feet, literally. Some groups do that. But the bigger context of that is that he was giving them an example to follow. And the example is of serving one another. And that always costs, it always takes humility to do that. Let's go over to Mark chapter 10, verse 41 for a moment. And there's another passage here, somewhat similar. Mark rewrites a little bit differently than the other writers. So if you want to turn over to Mark chapter 10 and verse 45 to 41. 41 to 45. When the 10 heard about this, Jesus now has told them that one of them will betray him. And James and John have created a stir amongst the disciples, arguing who is actually going to be sitting next to him. And Luke tells the account and says that the disciples began to argue amongst themselves who was the greater, who was the most important. And so here in Mark, it doesn't include all of that. But these words, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers and Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." So in that, we see Jesus again, the servant, came to serve and not be served, but he also calls his disciples to do the same thing, to this life of service. And that's all of us. And serving, what does that look like? That means putting the needs of others ahead of our own in order to help them. Serving others takes time, and it takes energy, and it takes effort, but we're still called to do it. If you're like me, and probably most of us do this, we put limits on where and how we serve. We have this maybe subconscious set of qualifications that someone or some situation needs to meet in order for us to serve them. And so if it doesn't fit into that, well, we're just not going to serve them. We want to serve if it's convenient, the right time, the right place, the right day, maybe the right person, the right scenario. In our part of the world, Christians, we tend to believe that God would never ask us to do something that's uncomfortable, something that'll take us out of our comfort zone. Surely he wouldn't ask us to do something that we didn't like or weren't good at, something that cost us something. Surely he wouldn't ask us to get our hands dirty just to help somebody, especially on Sunday if we're all dressed up and ready to go to church. But God does ask us, because Jesus did it for us. And no servant is greater than their master. So if he served, ought we not to serve one another with the same attitude of humility and of sacrifice? Jesus never put any limitations on who or how or when he served. He was always open to an opportunity to serve. And the biggest one, of course, was to die on the cross for our sins. And sometimes we go into serving with the wrong motive as well. We'll serve to be noticed, praised, or rewarded. But that's not the kind of serving that Jesus modeled for us. Some people wait for the opportunity to do the big thing, you know. You're just waiting, 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 and watching for that big opportunity to come along. That thing that'll get attention, that'll make a big difference, like pulling somebody out of a burning car. We always kind of think, whoa, boy, I do that. Some big important kind of thing. Or maybe an act of service to help somebody who's famous or popular, where it's going to get some attention, where the spotlight's going to be on us, and we're going to get some praise from it. But you know, those big opportunities, they don't happen very often to very many of us. You can wait your whole lifetime for that one key big thing that you think you're going to do to serve somebody else that's going to be really important, and it may never come. My experience, I guess, in my life, I guess I have discovered that most of those opportunities don't come. But what does come is the opportunities to serve in small ways, to do small things, very practical things. And all of us can do that. Those opportunities come in the daily grind of life, unannounced. They're little opportunities that God often puts in our pathway on a given day, which are all opportunities for us to respond and to serve people. And in serving people, we are actually serving the Lord. So do you want to serve God? Serve people. That'll do it every time. And all of us are called to live that life of serving, to always be ready to serve. It's not limited to pastors or missionaries. It's for all of us. And it's not our religious duty. It's the part of who we are as followers of Christ. Now, that being said, I want to tell a little bit of my journey, I guess. When the sharing happened last Sunday, many of you indicated that you saw a gift of serving or a servant attitude, whatever it was. And but you know, that's reality for me. Any gifts test, those spiritual gift tests that you can take, I don't know if you can trust them all the time. I've taken many over my lifetime, but as a pastor, that is, as a Christian, I should say. But almost everyone has, when it comes to the gift of helps and serving, those two gifts are at the top of the list. And sometimes they're equal with pastoring, teaching, and sometimes they're above pastoring and teaching. So that's always been part of my life. And I came into pastoral ministry to serve. Wasn't so much to be, quote, a pastor or a leader. It was to serve. And it just happened that my call to serve God led me into pastoral ministry. So at heart, I think many of you just sort of picked that out as I've always responded to the call to serve or the call to help. Our call to Meadow Lake was a call to help. It was a church that had been through a long bunch of problems and struggles. It had declined. There was 35 people there, and 16 of them were kids. So it was a church that was ready to close the door and sell the building. And I don't know how even we met this couple from Meadow Lake, but we met this couple, and they told their story. And, you know, we're just so excited about the opportunity to go and help them, and that's what they wanted, to help us. 12 years later, there's Herbert just down the road, a church there that had gone through some ups and downs too, and they needed some help. And so I guess I responded again to that call to help. We were there 7 years, took a year off and did odd jobs, and then was called by Lucille Wall. She was moderator of your church here at that time. And she had asked me to fill the pulpit a few times before that, but then she had called and asked if I could help them. She said, can you help us? And she sort of told a little bit of the story of some pastoral candidates that didn't work out and all that kind of thing. And so I heard that word, can you help us? You know, oh, yeah. So I can hardly say no to that. It's kind of this way I'm wired. My wife says it's also a handicap, a liability, because I just don't know how to say no often when I should. So I think almost all my ministry as a pastor has flowed out of that desire to serve. Not so much a desire to be, you know, have a position, a pastor or leader, that kind of thing, but more so because I just always felt God's strong call to serve wherever that took me. Now, where did it take me? I just want to share a few experiences that the leadership had asked me to share a year or so ago and never did. Like my first funeral. I just started in ministry at Meadow Lake. I was my first church and my first week in the office. And this couple from the church came in and they brought this lady. She had lost a son. And I got to know the story a little bit more. She had three sons, and this was the second son she had lost, both due to alcohol-related accidents. One had drowned, and this one had been killed in a car accident. So I was trying to pull this funeral together for this
this family was not no church connection and not really much interest in church. And I remember the service, my first funeral service, partway through the service, we just got started. In walks the two RCMP officers, and they had a man with them who was in handcuffs, and realized that this was the other brother. So this lady had lost two to alcohol-induced or related accidents, and their third son was in the penitentiary at Prince Albert. So it was kind of just erupted the whole service, everybody paused for a minute so I had to collect my thoughts, and they ushered him, sat with him, and then the pallbearers were sitting to my left, and they'd been drinking before the service, and they were just mocking it quite a bit, making jokes, laughing out loud. It was just really a distraction thing. And some other time I'll tell you how he responded to that, but that was my first that was my first funeral. And then there was a time that I had been called, the same couple in our church who had, they had lots of contacts in the community, and they had a contact with this lady who was going through a bad time, and they came to pick me up. We're going out to visit this lady. Her husband had been killed in a snowmobile accident. He had been with some buddies out snowmobiling. He ran into a barbed wire fence, and it pretty much decapitated him. And he left a widow and three sons. And so I was taken to this home. People I've never met, walking into the situation. There was mourning and crying and wailing. And the neighbors had come to help. And there I was in the situation. What do you do? What shall I say? In fact, how do you even get things calmed down enough to talk to the lady or pray with her? That was a tough one. Biggest funeral I've ever done, though. Later on, so that was, amazing. There's a time I got a call from the hospital. A young couple in our church were expecting a baby. She was into her eighth month of pregnancy. She sensed something was wrong, and so we went to the doctor, and he checked her over and said the baby was not alive. And so they wanted me there. I was with them right till they took her in and induced her. And as soon as the procedure was over, they asked me to come back into the room. And here I just, this is just totally out of my comfort zone for sure, and no experience in this. And I walked into the room, and there's the couple crying, and there's the little baby. He's holding it. And he walks over and gives it to me and then asks me to pray for them. And I'm holding this little, beautiful little formed baby, completely formed but lifeless, in my arms, hands, holding this baby and trying to think, what am I going to do and what am I going to say? That's another place that serving took me. And then there was more recently a time a woman from our church called me. She was distraught. She and her husband had gone out to the farm to visit their son, and they found them hanging in the basement. He had committed suicide. And so I was called out to the farm, and I walked into that. And again, it was one of those places where nothing quite prepares you for that. And I'd never experienced that before. And so try to help them, and there are many, many questions, the why questions pop up, and the guilt feelings, and try to minister to that couple was so difficult. That I remember our RCMP officer then asked me to come down in the basement and help them with the body. It was an old house, a small house, and had very steep steps. And so the coroner was down there, and the RCMP officer, and so they wanted me to help them get the body down, put in the body bag, and carry it out to the vehicle. I was just like, well, nothing quite prepares you for that. You never know where you go when God calls you to serve. Sometimes people say, I find out when I'm a pastor, they say, get a life, I get that. I got that a little bit from Betty's relatives, really. They're really good now, but it used to be they were pretty, always took pot shots, cheap shots at me because I was a pastor, but... when people say, get a life, I sometimes just want to fire back, you get a life. I've been to more deathbeds and seen more dead people and been in more difficult situations than you will ever have in a lifetime. But that was just kind of the story there. How did I get through it all? And I just want to take now a few minutes just to bear witness to the fact that God is faithful. God is faithful. And he will help you. When you're in over your head and you don't know where to turn, just remember, God is faithful. The God who calls you there to that situation is also the God who will get you through it. And I've experienced that many times as a pastor. So here's just a few more scriptures I'd like to share with you this morning. First is, God is faithful. We can trust him. That's just a blanket statement. God is faithful. You can always trust him. He'll always do what he says he will do. He will never leave you or forsake you. and you can count on it. Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not depend on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will direct your paths. God is faithful when you're tempted to give up. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. You probably heard this verse many times before. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. But God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you're tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. First reading of that passage is when you're tempted to do something wrong, of course, to sin, whatever that is in your life, it tells us here that in that situation, God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond what you can carry, or with it, he will provide a way out. Actually, a lot of pastors talk about giving up. I go through different difficult times like most of you, and there's times when you're just totally at the end of your rope and you just want to quit and pack it in. And this verse, I think, has been helpful. It's been true to my life as well, that God has always been faithful to provide a way out and to help. There's been times, just like you, when you're tempted, when you want to be angry, when you want to speak without thinking, when you want to respond without grace, when you want to believe the worst about somebody, when you try to judge people by their appearance, when you just want to be, or you're tempted to be unfaithful. And the list could just go on and on. You could add your things in there as well. But when we're tempted, we have to remember that God is still faithful and he will help us. So often tempted to give up, it was always God that provided a way out. Sometimes that way out was through his word. Sometimes it was through encouragement of the Holy Spirit. But many, many times it was the encouragement of people. You don't know what a word of encouragement will do to somebody that you might not realize is at the end of the rope. Want to pack it all in. God is faithful when we're tempted. He's also faithful when we fail him. Do pastors fail the Lord? Yep, we do. There's a story in Luke chapter 22 that I think I need to read it. Just, or it's part of the story anyway. It's Luke chapter 22, and it has to do with Peter. Now, this is before Jesus goes to the cross, and he's having this discussion, had the Last Supper with his disciples, and there's a discussion happens, and Jesus has some special insight about what's going to happen to Peter. In verse 31, he said, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. In those words, Jesus is already looking ahead to the days, very short time later, a day or so later, when Peter would deny him three times. Three times Peter would say boldly, I don't know this guy. I have nothing to do with him. Denied him three times. Jesus here knows that. That's interesting. He knows that. He prays, said, I prayed for you that your faith won't fail, even though it did. And then he says, and when you've turned back. So Jesus is already looking to a time when Peter would be restored. And that restoration came in John chapter 21. That passage that where Jesus met his disciples on the beach near Galilee. They had fished all night, caught nothing. He gives them instructions to throw the net out. They catch a bunch of fish. They realize it's Jesus. They head into the shore, and Jesus feeds them breakfast. And then he takes Peter aside, and they have this conversation. Do you love me, Peter? Do you love me? Three times. And in the end of that, Jesus restored Peter. God was faithful even when Peter failed. And God is faithful when we fail him. Do you know that? And do you believe that? He's still faithful when we fail him. And you need to remember that, not just for yourselves, but others around you. When other Christians fail God, and when they fail you, be careful you don't write them off too quickly. Because God is faithful even when we fail. He's faithful even when they fail. Because God is always faithful. But he's also faithful when things are at their worst. And here's this passage from Lamentations. Chapter 3, verse 21-26. Lamentations was written by Jeremiah. Jeremiah has witnessed the destruction of Israel, of Jerusalem. He's seen the enemies come in. He's seen people killed. He's seen bloodshed. He's seen homes burnt. He's seen the temple destroyed. Everything that has meant anything to him or the citizens of Israel, destroyed. And Lamentations is literally a crying out to God, lamenting over all that's happened. It could be really seen as a very sorrowful book, a dark book. But in chapter 3, after his previous 20 verses, they're all just pouring it out to God. 21 has these words. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those who hope in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. There's just a ray of sunshine in the midst of his lament. And we learn from this is that God is still faithful when things are at their worst. And I don't know if you've been at your worst. Most of us have something that we think has been the worst in our lives anyway. But it's maybe not as bad as other people face. This verse is also one that brings hope and confidence to a lot of people who are suffering for the faith today in other countries. Those are being persecuted. Those are seeing their loved ones martyred. Those are seeing their homes burnt or their church burnt and destroyed. A passage like this, they can go to at a time when things are at their worst, and they can draw hope, enough hope and confidence to keep going and to press on. We've had some of those too, as a family, as a couple, those difficult times. And probably the one that always comes to my mind, of course, is, and I've shared it before, is our daughter, you know, about almost 6 years now, met a guy online and just took off, cut off all relationships with her friends and her family and her two children. She has a little granddaughter that she saw, I think, around maybe within the first year of her birth, but no contact since. We know that she's in BC somewhere. We have an idea about the approximately where she might be. But we went through a pretty tough time with all of that, you know, especially because we ended up taking her kids in through different situations. Both were children. We had to take them in and look after them because they were kind of orphaned by their mother. And there was just that swirling pit of anguish and heartache and worry, wondering what's happened to her. How could this happen? What could we have done? You know, the questions every parent asks. And like most parents, you wonder where your kid is, you know. And often we wonder, where is that girl? I wonder how she's doing. And so that was one of the dark times, I guess, that we've been through. And just the ministry, there's always challenges, of course. And some of these situations I shared earlier, that brought lots of challenges as well. But in it all, God remained faithful. It was always God that gave us strength to get up and keep going. It was always God who somehow, some way, would bring someone or something into our lives to give us encouragement to keep going. There's always this ray of sunshine in the midst of the darkness. I can say over and over again, it just showed up all the time. You know, we went to Meadow Lake, they didn't know if they could even pay us any wage. And so I just said, well, we'll be full-time and just let me work on the side, you know, for whatever you can pay, you know. So we never knew what a few families are going to do because, like, you know, there's 16 of 35 people were children, so like, what can they do, you know? And God provided. We didn't know. First week we were there, another couple moved in from North Battleford. They moved into the apartment across from us, and they were volunteering to do the youth ministry in our church. Just volunteer as well. And he broke into our apartment all the time and dropped off stuff from the church. You know, it's like, oh man, we had so much surprises to go home and all of a sudden come in and, oh, where'd this come from, you know? And just the many things like that. It was, you know, just God was providing. He's so, so faithful. And last one there is, he's faithful to do what he promised. He is faithful to do what he promised. 1 Thessalonians 5:24. The one who calls you is faithful and he will do it. Or as the New American Standard has it, the one who calls you is faithful, he will bring it to pass. And I love that version. He will bring it to pass if we trust him and if we're willing to step into the harness of serving God, wherever and whenever that happens in our lives. God gives every one of us an opportunity to serve someone else. Someone in your life today or tomorrow or the next day needs help. Someone in your life needs to be served. And God, on the other hand, wants to serve people. He wants to serve them as Jesus did. And the only way that he can is through us, through each one of us. The only way it's going to happen is if we are willing to serve on his behalf. Ephesians 6:7, serve wholeheartedly as if serving the Lord. Wow, that changes the perspective a lot. Now, all of us want to serve God. We really, I think everybody here really has this desire to serve God. We all want to serve him. And the way that we do that is serve others. That doesn't look very glorious sometimes. Not glamorous, and maybe there's not much spotlight or not much attention, not much praise, but that is the place that God is calling us again and again. And when we do step into that uncomfortable place, we have this promise that he who calls you is faithful and he will do it. He will bring it to pass if we're willing to humble ourselves. Philippians chapter 1 verse 6, Paul writes to the Philippians, he says, he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion until the day of Christ. There's the promise of God. He will bring the work in our hearts to completion by the day that he comes back again, if we are willing and we will humble ourselves and do what he did. We're simply just to serve other people. That's one thing that ought to characterize us as the people of God, is that we are willing and ready to serve when it's not comfortable, when it's not easy, when it's messy, and it often is messy, even when there's no reward and we don't see the results, it's still all for the Lord. That's how we serve him. So these words, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 24, have echoed in my life so much over my time as a pastor. I don't think I'm really done necessarily pastoring, but I've done pastoring a church, yes, but we don't plan to move anywhere. We plan to hopefully serve yet in different ways, practical ways, of course, but not knowing what's down the road, we just say we can trust a God who's faithful, and he is faithful, and he'll be faithful to you as well. So don't be afraid. Don't lose heart. Roll up your sleeves and do what Jesus would do. Serve one another. And he will bring it to pass.